This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. And if you're a new listener and you're listening on the website and would prefer to listen to the show on the go, you can download the podcast from the iTunes podcast store to your smartphone podcast app. Just look for USEA in the podcast store. On the show this week, Natalie Hollis from Area 2 is going to tell us about some extreme measures she goes to get fit for the eventing season. You won't want to miss that. But first, Stephen Bradley, who has survived the winter in the frozen north of Virginia, instead of choosing to go to Aiken or further south, tells us how he's managed to do that and get his team ready for the start of the season. Stephen joins me now, having returned to his base in Berryville, Virginia. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being invited.
Well, you're back home, as I say. You did have a little excursion to Aiken, but we want to talk about the winter training and how you've survived that very tough winter in the frozen north. Was the trip to Aiken just for a competition?
I actually went down just to take some lessons and to get a little bit of a heads up going into my horse's fitness, because it has been such a tough winter up here, and was a little more behind the eight ball than I'd hoped to been. So I went down to take lessons, to do some fitness work, to do a little bit of schooling. I did compete one of the young horses, and the older horses just did some mileage work.
So otherwise, you have toughed it out up there in what has been a very harsh winter. You're probably used to it, but give us an idea, Stephen, of your training facilities there and how you've managed to cope with the facilities that you have, presumably an indoor arena.
Well, I actually don't have an indoor arena. So
commiserations right there, Stephen, if you're a tough man.
I did this years ago before I started going south when I was quite a bit younger, and I thought, you know, I did it then, I think I can do it now, and you just make the best that you can. We have a nice outdoor arena, we have lots of good hacking, and we have lots of gravel roads. So you have to be tough, and you have to be ready to tough out the weather, and you learn how to dress in lots of layers and be ready and able to take them off when necessary. But it really depends on what the weather is giving you as to what you're going to be able to do. The way our ring is situated is on top of the hill and doesn't have any shade around it. So most mornings, by mid to late morning, even if it's just in the high 20s, the ring will be thawed out enough to ride on. And we made use of that predominantly during the course of the winter. If the ground is really frozen, if the temperatures are not getting out of the teens, then obviously we don't ride, because I don't think that's healthy for the horses. And otherwise, we vary our work accordingly to the temperature and how hard we can work, and whether we can jump, whether we can do a canter in the ring, and just try to use common sense with that.
So how many horses would you have at home, and how many of those would be in training then during the winter, Stephen?
We have, it varies a little bit from month to month, but we have about 15 horses in work and 15 horses in training, and all of those would be in work. We've got everything from a youngster that is 6 months off the track to three prelim horses, one of which is getting ready to step to intermediate. So we have various and sundry levels of not only competition and skills, but of also fitness that we have to work and maintain.
So give us an idea of when your winter training would begin then. Does it mean, because of the conditions there, that they would have had a longer holiday after the end of last season before you pick them up again in the new year?
Well, it actually means that they had a shorter holiday. They had competition horses had probably 3 weeks off after their last competition. And then I put them back into quiet work, whether it's hacking, going for long walks, being ponied, or whatever, because I knew that going into the winter, I needed to come into the winter with them more fit than what I normally would, because you have to plan on having stretches of a few days here and there where you're not going to be able to ride because temperatures are too cold or the ground is absolutely frozen and the weather creates such a situation where you can't get on the road with your rig and go to an indoor to use one.
So what staff do you have then, Stephen, to take care of these horses, and how many of them would be riding so that you can get through as many as possible, obviously, during the shorter winter day?
Well, the staff that I have all ride. I have 3 full-time people and 1 part-time person. They all have 1 or 2 horses of their own, and they all help me with the riding. That's the way I set my program up, so that we all share in all of the work, in all of the riding, and I set up a schedule every day that we go down and all the horses get done through, and we make that happen.
So once you start the training, then you've got the local roads there where you can get out and do some trot sets and so on. Are you able to canter at all off-road during the winter that we've had? I mean, just put this in context for us, Stephen. How does this winter compare to the other winters that you've been there?
Well, this is the first winter I've actually stayed at Long Branch, and it's probably the first winter in 10 or 12 years that I've stayed home. Having said that, at the facility I was at prior, I did not have an indoor, and so it was very much the same thing. We do predominantly our work in the ring. And what we do is at the beginning of the winter, we'll salt the ring. So that gives you about 10 degrees more where the sand will thaw and you can use it in times of it being a little bit colder. That's what we have found over the years. You get about 10 degrees when you do salt the arenas. And we do go out on the roads, but I don't, and I didn't do any cantering on the roads. We'd go out and trot on the roads. The little bit of cantering that I did would have been in my ring. And so it's obviously very level. You just make it work as best you can.
Right. I was wondering about the cantering off-road, you know, that you can, I mean, is the ground always hard that you're not even able to sort of do any trot or cantering in between the roads and the arena?
We actually did have a number of days this past winter that we were able to get out in the fields and use the fields. They would have been a little bit slick, and so this time of year the horses don't have stud holes, so you have to be smart in where you are riding, and you're not going to use big hills. You're going to use much more level fields, and when you are on hills, you are going to have to walk down any kind of steep downhill part. But we were able to get out in the fields until early part of February. And we, there again, made use of the days that we could and used the fields. We did, knowing full well that there were probably, which sure enough there were, some stretches of time where we weren't going to get out of the ring, excuse me, or that we'd be using the gravel roads.
How about hunting? Do you take advantage of that?
I don't. I used to, and I love it tremendously. A very, very dear friend, Helen Brettle, took me out hunting this winter on one of her horses, and it reminded me how much I missed it. I think it is, for the young horses, tremendously helpful. I think it's great for their fitness, for them learning to go across the country, for them developing their footwork on uneven ground, and getting brave, getting the pull from other horses and with their friends. But unfortunately for me, time is very restricting, and so I have to set my priorities to my riding and teaching and training, and it doesn't leave a lot of time to go on.
Well, we all know how brutally cold stables can be at the big barns in the winter. Mm-hmm. And is there a way that you combat that? How do you cope with the cold weather inside and of course, you know, frozen pipes and that sort of thing?
Well, we do have quite a big barn, and it is very cold, especially seeing as how it's predominantly cinder block. But again, we dress against the weather. We are prepared for the barn to be cold. We don't necessarily clip the horses full out when we do clip, so that they have a trace clip or a blanket clip. And it wasn't until we were getting ready to go south that we clipped them out full. And then we do have to be smart about the buckets, because yes, they are going to freeze. There's not a lot you can do for that. I don't like using the buckets with warmers in them. I don't like using electric waters. I'm very old school, and I like to watch how much my horses are drinking, particularly in the wintertime. So you always have to have the water buckets rotating during the day, and load them up with water at night and then a late night before you go to bed, and making sure that they're in front of them. So most of it is just using common sense again and good judgment and being prepared to deal with some of these extreme times that we get.
And going into a Virginia winter, presumably you are planning well ahead in terms of stocking up on hay and that sort of thing. And the quality of hay, as we know, is all important. Where do you get that from? And how much would you buy in at the start of the winter then, Stephen?
Well, I'm very lucky in that we have a farmer that grows beautiful alfalfa hay and beautiful timothy hay and beautiful grass hay. And he is literally a quarter of a mile down the road and can keep us stocked even when the weather's bad and the roads are frozen and the snow is covering everything. And so I'm spoiled that way. We don't have a great loft in our barn, and so to get a large amount of hay in at one time is very difficult as far as loading it into the loft. So we do smaller, more frequent visits from him and keep hay coming, rotating probably once a week. And so I'm a big grass timothy type hay person, but during the wintertime when we don't have grass and trying to keep the horses' weight on with a few of them, we will put them on alfalfa hay and use that to help keep them going.
What type of bedding do you use, Stephen, and how do you dispose of that in the winter?
We have shavings, and we have a big old spreader, and we go out and spread it on unused fields. And the fields at the farm are rotated so that some of them are being used for crops, some of them being used for turnouts, some of them are being used for retired horses, and some of them are not being used at all. So we're very lucky that way in that we can follow in the fields that are not being used and just spread the manure there so that it actually decomposes and helps the upcoming year when the crops, you know, the grass starts to grow in and then they start planting crops and things.
Now, we're just hopefully at the turn of the seasons. It's starting to warm up a little bit generally. Hopefully it stays that way as we're in mid-March now. How do you feel the horses have come out of this sort of winter? What have been the disadvantages to getting them fit for the season?
Well, there's several disadvantages, absolutely, in that we started off the winter really strongly, and we had one stretch of 5 days in January where the ground was absolutely frozen and the temperatures barely got up into the 20s, so we weren't able to ride. However, we had a longer stretch of an extreme temperature drop for a full week in February, and then after that, multiple snowfalls that really made it impossible not only to ride but also to ship out. So that 2-week stretch really put us back as far as having horses ready to compete. Having said that, I wasn't planning on competing my horses until the end of March, early April. I knew when I stayed home this winter that it was going to mandate my season starting later. And I must admit, it was a little bit eye-opening and a little more frustrating than I had thought about to keep following events as the season starts and see all my friends out competing and going and knowing that they will be halfway through their season when I actually am just getting started. And we all have to get the cobwebs out and the rust off and out of ourselves as well. And so you have to plan on that in your work and your workload. In addition, since everybody predominantly goes south, I do all of my work up here on my own, so I haven't really had an opportunity to get help, to get lessons, which in part is why I went to Aiken, to get some help for a week and kind of get some of the cobwebs out and get started before the competition starts at the end of March.
And who do you have help from?
I work with Mara Depew on the Platte quite a bit, and I'll use her to, you know, start to whip me into shape and to check up on the horses and, you know, let her help me with the jumping and be a set of eyes and a little bit for everything. So that is, that's who I worked with when I went to Aiken.
So when does your season start then, Stephen? Where are you going and how many horses will you have?
I will start in the end of March and will compete the one novice horse that went down to Aiken and competed one time. He'll run again the end of March. The rest of the horses are probably just going to start the following weekend at CDCTA, in part because when I got down to Aiken and was riding them and working them, I didn't have them as fit as I had hoped. And I realize that. So I'm going to just put off their start until April now. I'd hope to start them in March, maybe even earlier March, like the full gallop before we came home or Southern Pines on the way home or something like that. But they were far from being ready for that. So I will have one novice horse at Morven and then 3 preliminary horses at CDCTA, and then after that, we'll start alternating weekends, and those horses will continue going, and I have a few up-and-coming horses that have not even done their first competition, so they'll get started going on the off weekends where they can.
Well, looking ahead, the long view of the season and the year ahead, Wayne, knowing that you do a lot of teaching, a lot of clinics, and as well as the competition season, what does your year look like, Stephen, and what are your biggest goals competition-wise?
The season gets very busy, and during the competition months, I try usually not to do any weekend clinics. I'll do weekday clinics for a day here or there. And those actually are very well received and are getting more and more popular, and so they're easy to do. I try to keep the weekends open for competitions. And the really big goals for this spring are for the prelim horses. One, moving up to intermediate a little bit later in the spring, to going to their first one star, and then seeing what happens with all of those horses in the fall, and hopefully the one that's moving up to intermediate getting to Fair Hill in the two star. So that was part of what made my decision not to go south a little bit more easy, in that I don't have any upper level horses right now, and I'm a big believer that we have to set the season up for the horses as athletes. They can't be fit 12 months out of the year. They've got to have a season and have a little bit of a letdown time and have a season and have a little bit of a letdown time. So I've organized my year around doing, during the competition season, weekday clinics, leaving the weekends open for competitions for all the different levels of horses, and in the summertime, dropping the competitions back to a minimum so that I'll pick up more weekend clinics again, and then that would transfer into the following winter.
So the big question I'm leaving you with, Stephen, is would you do this again, winter in Virginia?
You know, if things necessitated this happening, I would and could do it again. But I'm hoping that next winter will be a little bit different and that I'll have some horses moving up into the upper levels. I will have the opportunity and make available the opportunity to go south again. Having said that again, though, there are always things that come up in day-to-day life with and without the horses that sometimes make the decision that, you know what, you're not going to be able to go south this winter. You're going to have to stay home. And if that happens, I will definitely be able to make it work. And we will see where it takes us.
Well, hopefully the thaw will continue, because I'm sure you're all ready to warm up there. I want to wish you the very best of luck when the season does get underway for you, Stephen. And thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being invited and being included.
And now, for those women riders who are listening and who have been telling themselves that they really should do more to get fit for the season, Natalie Hollis from Area 2 is going to give you some ideas to mix it up a little bit. And if you think falling off in the mud is bad enough, take a listen to this. Hi, Natalie. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
We're going to talk about women's fitness for riding, because it becomes even more important these days to maintain a level of fitness, especially if you're an amateur and you're doing a full-time job. But when you're a professional, you have so many horses to ride, it's a question of finding time. And then as we get older, it becomes more challenging to maintain that level of fitness and combat the injuries we pick up along the way. So let's start by saying that you are really in some ways going to the extreme, but you're not yet 40 and you've maintained a level of fitness to ride quite a lot of horses each day. You've got a full stable of horses. Tell us a little bit about your business first.
Well, we're located in Dickerson, Maryland. It's in Area 2, and we've got a facility with 30 stalls. It's about half our horses, staff horses, working students, and mine, and some sale horses, and the other half is clients. So we've got everything going up from, you know, three-year-olds up through horses, you know, doing the upper levels and kind of everything in between. So definitely a busy full schedule with the horses and with our own students and clients as well.
So how many horses would you be competing with this season then, Natalie, once it gets underway in the north there?
Three of my own, and then probably, just depending on how the schedules go, a couple of our horses that are for sale as well. We kind of alternate, you know, with who has more time to show those horses.
So you have quite a team of friends there, really, other people with whom you can exercise and do your fitness program and your various activities. Why did you start to expand on the things that you were doing to keep fit, Natalie? What was the catalyst for this?
Well, you know, we've all busy enough with, you know, just taking care of the barn and doing things like that. But, you know, even if you're riding one horse a day, it's not doing enough to, you know, get you fit enough for, you know, everything that you need with the sport, especially as you move up the level. And even if you're riding several horses a day, you still need to have something that helps you build your stamina and strength to be able to do that well. So we started looking at other things to do, you know, so that it wasn't just kind of boring, oh, I'm going to go run, I'm going to go to the gym, because I get very bored running, and I get very bored and kind of always don't know what to do if I just go to the gym. So we started with a group of us doing like mud runs, doing Tough Mudders, Super Spartans, things like that. We joined like a boot camp class that was called Soldier Fit and did that several times a day. And then a lot of us went and started doing yoga as well to just help with the flexibility, and yeah, it helps your position and helps everything loosen up and just gives you that extra fit there too.
So tell us about these different activities that not exactly conventional, because you wouldn't expect an eventer to willingly go and roll in the mud unless they fell off. So how did that come about?
A friend of mine down the road who has a different barn, Carrie Blackmer, had done a couple of Tough Mudders, and she asked us if we'd want to do one with her. So we kind of got in the first time, not really knowing what we were getting into completely. You know, we had an idea, but didn't completely know what it was going to be like. And it was actually a lot of fun. You know, you're working as a team, you're helping each other get over walls. You know, you've got to do things like jump in ice water, you know, go under electric shock and some other crazy things and all the sort of stuff that, you know, probably it's the same sort of mindset, you know, as most inventors. You're like, sure, why not? And they were just a lot of fun. And then we started getting more and more people to come and do them with us. And then it would just be a big group activity and just a lot of fun to do. And you could definitely would feel it the next day or two, though, you know, 12 miles of doing that, you felt it the next day.
Okay, those two three-letter words don't exactly go together in my mind, mud and fun. What makes it fun, Natalie?
I just think it, because it's something different. I mean, it's not, there's definitely some mud involved, but it's not just all just mud. You know, there's climbing over ropes, there's doing monkey bars, there's, you know, carrying things. There's a lot of different activities within it. Basically, it's all set up to challenge you and see if you can make that challenge. And it just gives you like a little sense of accomplishment to be like, okay, yeah, I did that, you know, and then go on to the next obstacle and you look at this and think, oh, I'm not sure if I can do this or not. And then you do it. So, you know, it's just a nice little kind of challenge and then feels quite accomplished when you're done with it.
Well, certainly an accomplishment because it's over quite a few miles, isn't it?
Yes, the Tough Mudders are around 12 miles and the Super Spartans are about 10 miles.
And how often would you do that?
Depending on how they kind of fit in with our show schedule, we've done like usually one in the spring and one in the fall for both of those and then added in some short like 5K fun runs as they fit in, you know, that, and those would be several times a year. There's like a warrior dash and rock races, color runs, mud dog runs, little things that are just an easier short one as well.
Tell us about the warrior rush and those names that you shared with us just then. I'm sure unless you do this sport, you're not familiar with the different divisions you obviously have.
Right. Well, the Warrior Dash is a 5K, and it's pretty similar to like the Tough Mudder as far as what the obstacles are like. But then there, the Rock Race was one that we did that was actually a lot of fun, and a bunch of even the kids from our barn came. So it was kind of the 14-year-olds through the 50-year-olds that went to this race, and it was a lot more just fun activities, like they had big blow-up water slides and a big bouncing thing, and there's bubbles, and yeah, it was just a more, had some things like Wipeout, where you'd try to walk across something and there's a big ball going back and forth that's going to knock you into the water, and that one was just a lot of fun. So it's not as physical, but it was a good way to get a lot more people involved in doing things besides the ones that were, you know, 12 miles long.
Okay, so you do all of these other things for fun, as you say, rolling in the mud, but you also do strengthening exercises like yoga, and there's another one which is a crossover between yoga and Pilates. Tell us about that.
Yes, we have a group of us. It's my business partner and our barn manager and one of the working students and then a couple clients that we all meet and do yoga twice a week at a studio that's local to here, and that the yoga is great. You know, it just really helps you stretch out everything. You know, I've got a lot of old injuries from bones I've broken and injuries I've had, and I feel like it just really helps stretch out that scar tissue and also helps you prevent new ones, as well as it just really helps with your position, even riding, because if everything's a little bit looser and more open, it's easier, you know, to sit and do things. And then the other that's the crossover is called Pyo. And one of the working students and I do that every morning on the off mornings that we're not going to yoga. So it's a combination of Pilates and yoga. And, you know, it's just like a half an hour DVD, but we'll do those in the morning, you know, before we start the barn.
We all know that core strength is very important to riding, and those exercises will, of course, help build that. So what kind of things have helped you with your riding since you've been focusing on these? As a woman, it's different than for a man. And have you found that it's given you any strength in riding that you maybe didn't have before you were focusing on core strength building?
It definitely just helps with my riding that I think it helps my back so much more, because the stronger your core is, I feel like, you know, the stronger your back is. And I had broken my femur when I was a kid and, you know, had a lot of stuff that was, you know, messed up my back from breaking my leg. So I feel like as I've gotten my core stronger, the soreness in my back has went away, which has helped me be able to, you know, gallop better or even just sit the trot better and not feel like I've got these nagging, you know, back pains because everything's so much stronger. And especially, I would tell all of our students and working students, you know, when they're doing trot sets, you know, do the whole thing in 2-point. Make yourself stronger that way. So, you know, besides doing that, the Pio, I think, really helps just build up that extra core strength so that you can do all of that and be able at the end of a cross-country course to keep yourself up and, you know, in a nice, strong position where you're able to help your horse out.
Now, one of the subjects that's been taboo very much in the media, but a British tennis player brought it to the fore recently when she openly admitted for the first time publicly that that time of the month for women during menstruation can be debilitating when you're a professional athlete. And it's no different for riders either. Do you find that the exercises that you have done and with your friends have helped you generally with those issues?
Yes, for sure. I mean, you know, I always say with that exercise is one of the best things you can do. And I do think if you kind of get up and feeling, you know, crampy and achy and whatever, but if you get up and start stretching and moving and doing, all of a sudden your whole body feels a lot better.
And what about after competing, now that you're that much fitter, are you finding that you're able to gallop more horses a day or even compete more horses? Has that helped you with your stamina as well as your core strength and your aerobic fitness?
Yeah, absolutely. Because besides the horses that I have that I'm competing, I generally ride several students' horses every day too, just to give them training rides and do things like that. But, you know, all of the extra stuff we've done with the running, you know, just definitely helps your cardio and your stamina. And the other, you know, the other activities we've done with, like, our soldier fit or just even involved with yoga, with all the push-ups you do in yoga and other things like that, just gives you a lot more strength along with the, you know, the flexibility with the yoga and the Pio. So I think all of that definitely, you know, helps you just build up to where you can not only ride more horses a day, but ride them better, you know, all day, because you're not so tired by the time you're on the fourth or fifth horse. You know, you've got, you know, your muscles can keep going a lot more.
Well, you mentioned the injuries that you've had, and we know that the sport does come with its own share of injuries for most of us, and some of them can be career-changing and career-ending in some ways. Can you talk a little bit about what you've gone through, Natalie, and how these new activities have helped you really combat those injuries and hopefully prevent injuries in the future, of course, if you're that much stronger?
Right. Two of the worst injuries that I've had that have kind of affected me all over was when I broke my femur. Because basically to fix it, you know, they put a metal rod in, they pin your knee, you pin your hip, and then you're on crutches for a long time. Well, you know, they take out all that metal eventually later on, but there's still scar tissue from the surgeries, so that, you know, the scar tissue gave me a lot of back issues. Then I also had on that same side, my left knee was stepped on by a horse in a fall several years ago too, so that knee has caused me a lot of, you know, injury and just pain, you know, when you're trying to keep your stirrup short and gallop and jump and things like that. Definitely, you know, I've got to be careful with the running end of it, that I don't do too much and put too much strain on my knee. But I've found that, like, the stuff with, like, the yoga and the Pio, being more low impact but still muscle building and strengthening and stretching really helps to support those injuries and make, you know, the tissues and the surrounding muscles and ligaments stronger, like around my knee. So that's really helped with that. And everything that I've done with, you know, just alignment and stretching with the yoga and the pyo for my back has made a huge amount of difference. Like, I've definitely in a lot less pain than I used to be from it.
So what would you say to anyone that's thinking, gosh, these all sound fun, even rolling in the mud? How would you suggest they get started in any of these activities, Natalie?
Well, especially for the mud runs, I mean, if you just kind of Google search that, you can come up with tons of them that are in every area all over the country. And I would definitely say to start out slow, you know, go to something that's a 5K one before you are kind of silly like we did and jump straight into a 12-mile tough mudder. I mean, luckily, everybody is fairly fit and could do it, but you also don't, being riders, you also want to make sure you're not going to do something silly and hurt yourself either. You know, we're always very careful when we're doing those to make sure we're not going to have a silly injury and then, you know, miss the whole season because we went out to have a little fun. But, you know, if you start slow and start with like a 5K, work up to it, make sure you've got a little bit of a base of fitness, it gives you something, too, to work towards and to train towards. It's so much easier, I think, to be goal-oriented and say, okay, well, I'm going to do this on this date, so I need to start running now to be prepared for that.
So lots of opportunities to roll in the mud well into your middle age then, Natalie.
Absolutely.
Terrific. Well, you should be absolutely fighting fit then for the start of the season there in the north, which hopefully will be sometime in the next few weeks. And despite the winter that you've had up there, are you ready and confident for the start?
Pretty ready. You know, we've been keeping all the horses going as best we can with the weather. You know, we just really need to get out and have a cross-country school and do some things like that to get ready. But I'm hopeful that at least all the pretty seasoned campaigners can get out and get going. And then, yeah, the young horses might just have to wait a little bit longer so they can get out and do a little more first.
Well done. Well, the best of luck to you for the season and your continued fitness. And hopefully, you know, you survive all that rolling in the mud and have many good seasons to come.
Well, thank you.
Well, who knew that fun and mud could go together? And if you take part in any extreme sports to get fit for the season, we'd love to hear about them. You can post your stories on the Facebook page. And a reminder that this podcast is available as a transcription on the website at useventing.com. The podcast, as I mentioned earlier, is available on iTunes, and you can download it to your smartphone podcast app and listen to the show on the go. Until next week, thanks for your company and enjoy your eventing.